When I looked at them, they all started talking at once. "That he, she kidnapped," a short woman stammered while pointing a shaking finger at the window. I looked at a young man, standing next to the woman, pointing to the feet of someone down on the floor. Those feet had on the largest pair of woman's high heels I'd ever seen. My eyes moved up two hairy legs to a Kluckett uniform dress belted at the waist, and finally stopped at a man's face wearing makeup with a blonde wig askew on his head. A woman wearing a uniform with the name Erlene sewn over the pocket sat on the floor with his head in her lap, trying to arrange the wig back in place. She was rocking back and forth, mumbling, "She didn't deserve this. No, she didn't deserve this. She shot first. She got shot first." Another young worker, maybe in his teens, was repeating the same thing over and over while nodding to the victim on the floor. "That's right. First she got shot, then..." The other two workers shouted their versions of what happened, talking over each other to tell me at the same time. "Is she still alive?" I asked the tall, skinny man wearing a name tag that read, "Lionel, Manager." He was wiping the grease off his hands down the front of his uniform shirt and looking at the person on the floor. He was the one at the window when I ran up and stepped back, giving me a clear view of the aftermath inside. "Lionel, your name's Lionel, right?" I asked him, trying to get his attention. He nodded while he stared at the body on the floor. He continued wiping his hands up and down the front of his shirt. "My name's Brandy, Brandy Alexander. I heard it all over the drive-thru speaker. Can you let me in? I'm kind of scared standing out here, and I might be able to help," I said. Lionel finally looked at me as if he were seeing me for the first time and moved toward the entry door next to the drive-up window. I looked around to see if there were any other potential witnesses or anyone planning to add a robbery to the shooting and kidnapping. It was midnight, and the streets were dark and empty, lacking the crowds found only a few blocks away. The slightest breeze caused wicked shadows from street lamps to dance under the giant oaks. 100 years of limbs entwined across the neutral ground forced most of the light upward, illuminating the second story of nearby homes, leaving their entrances shrouded in darkness. This same street that made you lock your doors and look over your shoulder at night invited you to stroll under the shade of the same trees in the daytime. Lionel unlocked the door to let me in, then quickly locked it behind me, saying, "Everything gets locked at 10 o'clock. Only the drive-thru stays open." I looked at him behind the fast food counter and noticed his arm was shaking as he pointed to the person bleeding on the floor with a gaping chest wound. Everyone was silent. "I told you putting on a dress would get you nothing but trouble," Lionel shouted at the victim on the floor. "It got you shot, and now Chardonnay's gone and got himself hit in the head and kidnapped." "I called 911. An ambulance should be here soon," I said again to the woman sitting on the floor. "Does anyone know CPR?" No one responded as I glanced around. I checked for a pulse and could not find one. "Your friend might have a chance. Get some towels, please. We have to put pressure on that wound to try to stop the bleeding." The smell of hot grease that reeked of not having been changed frequently made me gag. I put my hand over my mouth. The woman on the floor stopped praying and looked up. "Shut up, Lionel. Get some towels," she said, and attempted to straighten the wig on the victim's head. I wondered if she thought the sight of blood was making me nauseous. All of the employees were looking at the victim bleeding on the floor and shaking their heads. Lionel stammered and wiped his hands down the front of his uniform again. "She, the one came in the window, never even asked for money," Lionel said, handing me some clean towels he grabbed from the front counter. I sat down on the floor next to the woman. The grease smell wasn't as pungent down here, and the coolness of the tile floor seemed calming. I placed the towels over the bullet hole and noticed there was no blood pooling underneath the body. I motioned for one of the boys standing along the wall to come and help me and showed him how to apply pressure to the wound. "Lionel, find as many towels as you can," I said. To avoid another wave of nausea, I stayed close to the floor so the smell of rancid grease wouldn't overtake me. I crawled far enough away to give the young man room to work, but kept an eye on him until the ambulance arrived. The air conditioning was on full blast, and I started to shiver sitting on the cold tile floor in shorts. I hugged my knees into my chest. Focusing on the crisis, I put aside my annoyance at Dante for not helping me move, and dialed his NOPD work number. It was always easier to talk to Dante about life and death matters where others were concerned than anything personal going on with us.